College Theater Program enables students and faculty to continue promoting HFCC's artistic standards. By becoming a member of the Friends of HFCC Theater, you are allowing the theater program to prosper through establishing a scholarship fund, improving costume and scene shop facilities, and enabling the continuation of musical theater productions. For more information on becoming a Friend of HFCC Theater, call 313-845-6478.
This is an official station of the MAEB. The Michigan Association of Educational Broadcasters was formed in 1977 to support your local high school and college radio stations. These stations serve the community and create alternative programming. But most importantly, they discover and train the next generation of broadcasters. For more information on the MAEB and its affiliates, visit www.maeb.org.
Computer Information Systems Certificate in Web Technologies and Design.
Love to design stuff and play on the internet? Henry Ford Community College offers a one-year certificate program in web technologies and design. Advanced HTML, computer art, web authoring tools, and web multimedia are a few of the courses offered.
Computer Information Systems Certificate in Web Technologies and Design.
The program is designed to prepare a student to take CIW Certificate Internet Webmaster exams.
For more information on CIW exams, log on to www.ciwcertified.com.
Drop by the HFCC Counseling Office or log on to the web at hfcc.edu.
Computer Information Systems Certificate in Web Technologies and Design.
I'm trying to use the phone!
Hey, loyal listener, call WHFR at 313-845-9676 or toll free at 1-800-585-HFCC extension 9676.
What? I couldn't hear that last part!
That's 845-9676 or toll free 1-800-585-HFCC extension 9676.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And today, we're going to explore some of the now classic and highly publicized cases that are coming out of Michigan's sister state of Illinois. Sam Maranto is Illinois State Director for the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, and Mr. Maranto is best known for his role as the lead investigator of the 2004 Tinley Park, Illinois mass sighting case, the O'Hare International Airport sighting of 2006, and the North Lake car incident of 2008. And his case studies have been used in numerous television programs, including 10 Best UFO Encounters on NBC's Dateline, Invasion Illinois, Aliens at the Airport, and History Channel's UFO Hunters. He is an active lecturer and event organizer and a frequent guest on the radio show Coast to Coast AM. And we're honored to give him to speak with him today on We Are Not Alone. Welcome to the show, Mr. Maranto.
Well, thank you very much, David. It's a pleasure to be on.
It's good to have you. We're talking about 2004 Tinley Park case. Now, I am an investigator, and I am ashamed to say I don't know very much about it. So why don't you fill me in along with our listeners?
A triangulated configuration of lights, illuminations, that appeared to be more reddish than orange, appeared over the Tinley Park area on multiple nights, seen by thousands, if not into as many as 10,000 witnesses. This is a highly populated area south of the Loop, one of the most illuminated areas south of the Loop, and it is a part of Cook County.
When you say the Loop, you're talking about Chicago, right?
Chicago Loop, yes.
Yeah, okay. Now, Tinley Park is not a park per se, but a town, a city?
Yes, I believe it's the village.
Okay.
And population is, I believe, in excess of 100,000. It's adjacent to Orland Park, my hometown, and many other towns nearby with relatively high populations. The nights of the mass sightings were actually not just one, but multiple nights, and multiple other sightings of the similar configuration slash object or objects. They started to really take notice in the press, and as far as my investigation in conjunction with other investigators, we started in 2004. And this, of course, came at the end or the heels of the episode in Minneapolis, St. Paul on the 19th, where an object was seen in the sky for about, 6 to as long as 9 hours, and it sat there relatively stationary or moving within a small vicinity. You may have heard about that one.
No, how high was it in the sky?
Oh, about 30,000 plus feet.
Yeah, so it was,
And it was a large object. I took some measurements and size, and we figured the object was well in excess of 600 feet in diameter, so I don't think it was a balloon.
Not to get off the Tinley Park thing, but you mentioned this object that's like 30,000 feet. That's below cruising altitude for a passenger plane, right?
Well,
32,000 feet, 36.
It could be, 30,000 to 50,000. They could get up, depending.
Yeah.
But, 30,000.
How can it sit there for 9 hours without being challenged by someone, by Air Force?
And all the response was that it was a weather balloon, yet no weather balloons were released. And, of course, our good friend Peter Davenport took many reports, and initially this is what they felt it was. In fact, a specific balloon from Canada, and when they investigated, when it was investigated, it seemed like it wasn't. So the object was there. Then, of course, if you go on the Internet and look up UFO Battleship in my name, you'll see a presentation I gave at the MUFON Symposium in 2007 showing some footage from Arizona of an object that very same night, which was, of course, again, August the 19th, of an object that sat in a 30-mile-an-hour wind. Very unusual, and the witness, who I've come to know for many years now, a very good researcher and scientist, this gentleman recorded the footage and said this was something unlike anything he ever seen. So here it is, 2 days before our event out here, where unusual anomalies are being seen in the sky. Also, on the 13th of August, just a week prior to our event, we had the first landfall of a Category 4 hurricane, which was one of the most devastating seasons of unusual weather, and I call it the year of the weird, 2004, and that, I believe, was Charles, which was a Category 4. Hmm. It was also the strange year that we had 13 other very nasty storms in the Caribbean, and we finalized that year with the tsunami/earthquake in Sumatra, killing hundreds, 200+ thousand people.
Yeah.
So on the 21st, this trickled in after other sightings in as far away as the Adriatic Sea, British Columbia, Canada, New York, other locations in Illinois, Ohio, etc., seeing the same configuration.
So now, are you saying, going back to these hurricanes and tsunamis and earthquakes, is this a coincidence? Are you suggesting that these UFOs are signaling these catastrophes, or what?
Part of my research, which has gone on for some years now, is coincidence or correlation between seismic activity, unusual Earth phenomena, and, of course, coronal mass ejections. And that, in conjunction with UFO activity and other strange human events, say, for instance, now with Japan and in New Zealand, with these earthquakes, there have been sightings of UFOs prior to, during, and thereafter. So not just events that are seismic, though seismic events seem to be the indicator there. All these seem to have some, there seems to be something in, you know, something involved there.
Right.
And what really started me in that direction, of course, was the 2004 period, the year of the weird, as I refer to it. The objects that were seen here, obviously, were initially thought to be a hoax, you know, flares and balloon, the usual. And when I seen the first set of footage that was brought over, I kept on playing it forward, back, speeding it up, and then looking at it at very close detail. And I could see that each configuration or each illumination maintained its position as if it were a isosceles triangle. The only thing that changed is the perspective, either its, you know, its movement, yaw, and pitch, or the position, of course, of the viewer, witness, themselves.
Okay, we are referring now to the Tinley Park?
Yes, the Tinley Park sighting.
Right. Okay.
So we had, I like to look at events 72 hours before, 72 hours afterwards on a case. And of course, my interests are mainly mass sightings or mass, you know, or multiple group sightings, independent group sightings.
Right.
And I love to have physical, or I like to have the video evidence and multiple sets of footage. That's always the best. Physical evidence, of course, would be the best in every scenario, but that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, what are we talking about, a crash disc here? Or what?
Anything dropped from emitted landings, stuff like that, but I haven't had any. In fact, the case this weekend I went off on was hopefully going to be something with physical evidence, but physical trace evidence, but that didn't happen. But, you know, I'm very impressed with the footage that we received. I identified over 25 sets of footage. I personally reviewed somewhere between 18 sets of footage, and I believe in possession copies of at least 13. So this case I considered still open because there's more revealing bits of information coming forward. On the 21st of August, we also had the Air and Water Show going on earlier that day. So initial indications were that, you know, this may have had something to do with that or may have been the final finale of their activities, and it really wasn't.
No, you ultimately would have found that out, wouldn't you have?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, people, you know, the media was picking up, oh, no, it had been F-18s, and that's what they were saying, the F-18s, because we had the Blue Angels out here. Well, they were grounded much earlier that day. The other thing is the object hovered motionlessly, and at times it maneuvered counterclockwise, then it took off. In some instances, there were reports of it being hyperleaping, being in one spot and then showing up in another, disappearing. So, very interesting. The object stayed for a length of time in the area. It was in and about the community for 45 minutes to an hour, various stages throughout the community. And then another object returned approximately 15 minutes to 20 minutes afterwards. On the first night, I believe it was 45 minutes, the second night, which was Halloween night. And, of course, because it was Halloween, most people just discounted it, that it had to be a hoax.
Right.
And it wasn't.
Yeah, they can think of all kinds of excuses why this has to be a hoax. It has to be a coincidence. It has to be an airplane balloon. But when you investigate, you find out, you know, it wasn't these things at all.
Sure. And the other thing is, you know, and I always despise the conduct of these so-called skeptics. And they're not skeptics. I'm skeptical. That's why I investigate.
Right.
And these people are cynical. They make their decision from a seated posture of either ignorance or bias, and they don't even take the time to go out and examine all the information, not just what seems to be relevant to their theories, but those things that may defy anything that they may even consider as being plausible. And that's what you have to do.
Yeah. Well, those things are outside their worldview, and they take them off the table.
Yes.
And if you take them off the table, you just come up with the evidence the explanation does not fit the evidence.
Correct.
But, you know, what do they care? They've got an explanation. Let's go and watch cartoons. Why not?
Exactly.
So, oh, I'm sorry. I should not be. I'm being cynical to them.
They deserve it.
They deserve it. Come on. So at any rate, this was how long did this Tinley Park incident, how many days or how many hours did this continue?
Well, we had ongoing sightings throughout the community, and we still do. I mean, this is, like I say, an open case. And to me, a case remains to stay open up until the point that it no longer warrants any more further investigation or can't really deliver any new insight. And it is bringing new insight. The reason why is because similar configuration/objects have been seen throughout the world. We're getting very good data on video and photographs. Just recently in Colorado, I believe it was Lafayette, Colorado, a similar configuration was shot on video. I have yet to see the footage and do a cross comparison, and there has been other locations, Utah possibly. Another interesting thing is that on the 21st there were accounts of objects flying in and out of this the first object, the large object. And to give you an idea, when we did the UFO hunters, they did an evaluation of the configuration to see how big it would be. Their evaluation was based on an object that a plane. They thought it was a helicopter, but it was actually a plane flying in front of the object, about 2 to 2.5 miles in front of the object. And we know the distance because we also have sets of footage shot from other angles, one being 90 degrees and approximately a half a mile away. So it really is nice when you get to do triangulation in real time, and you could do a nearly three-dimensional composite of the event. And here we have this plane flying in front, and their calculation came in at about 1,500 feet. But that, again, of course, was based on a helicopter, which would be 40-some feet. Now, based on the actual plane that flew in front of it, which I believe was 143 feet, we're looking at an object much larger, easily two to three times larger.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Now, would it be, you say that this was an isosceles triangle.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be a one solid object, or are there three different objects in formation? From what you've been able to ascertain,
yes,
from the video or sighting reports?
From what we could see, or what we hear from people who are directly underneath, who are looking at it at far closer range than most of the witnesses, they felt it was one solid object.
One solid object.
Yes. And the other thing is, I say isosceles because I had a gentleman call me on the, I believe it was November of 2010, where the repeat of the show was going on, was being rebroadcast on the History Channel. A gentleman called me at home and he said, "Is that you on the television?" And I'm like, "What is he talking about?" Sure enough, they were showing, rebroadcasting the show.
Mm.
And I says, "Yes, that is me." And he goes, "Well, I'm calling you from Wisconsin, Wausau, Wisconsin, to tell you that that is one object because I saw it on the 22nd of August. He was up at a mountain. They call it a mountain up there. It was not necessarily a mountain as one may be used to something in the west, but a mountain nonetheless, a large hill.
Big hill.
Big hill. And he was up there at a weather, one of those fire stations, the fire, what do they call that?
Observatory?
Yes, where you could climb up there many and get a nosebleed at the top.
All right.
And so he was a spotter for weather for NOAA.
Mm-hmm.
And was out there. He's seen these lights. He got out of his truck, left the truck, her door open, and he ran up there to see what it was. All the while coming up the steps, not knowing that this was one solid object. He just seen these massive lights.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he referred to. I refer to using, say, illuminations.
Right.
So he's coming, going up, and he's feeling his body being charged with very static and electric, electrical discharge, and you know, he's feeling pinching, and he gets nearly up there, and he finally realizes what he's looking at is one massive craft, but it was so well camouflaged that it took him to get nearly that close to be within, you know, 100, 200 feet away to make that, you know, deduction. He was looking at it, and he says there are recessed lights on each area, what we refer to a corner. The corners are curved, and the diameter of the light itself is approximately the same distance from the actual edge. He wasn't able to see if there was any more context to the object other than just that section of the edge. He wasn't able to see on top of it. It was that dark. He also noticed that in the very center there was an extremely deep red illumination, which was also recessed, but seemed to be comprised of multiple red illuminations. And he says he was able to see motion inside there of what appeared to be beings moving in and about the center.
Holy moly. So from his vantage point, he was that close to the object. He was able to see the object that closely.
He was able to get characteristics that were really helpful,
right?
Because they also fit in with other sightings that we have had, other cases in the area.
So with the culmination of the video and the triangulation and this guy's eyewitness report, how large was this single object?
The mountain that he was on. He says this thing was as big or bigger.
You're kidding me.
It was massive. It was awesome, you know. And he's looking at this, and he says the skin was as if it was moving, undulating like that of the skin Of an eel is what he referred to it as.
Of an eel?
Yes, of an eel.
Wow.
Now, in some of the photos that I've seen, and in ripping individual sections of video, I can, from the Tinley Park, I'm going to have to clarify things here, the Tinley Park sighting, there are these streaks of blue light, illumination, going across the bottom, arcing blue. And there are also other illuminations or patterns of illuminations underneath there, as if trying to mimic a star pattern.
Hmm.
And that was very interesting, too. And other people who were directly underneath were seeing them.
Hmm.
What also was being seen, both in Tinley Park and other cases, and also in this case, was the release or discharge of an object coming from, a small object coming from, the large object.
Huh.
Now, we have this on video. It needs to be enhanced, but we, you know, it's visible in one set of footage from the 21st of August 2004 in Tinley Park.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I don't have any footage from the gentleman up in Wisconsin.
Hmm.
Yet, as he describes this object, it is relatively similar to a sighting we had in 2008 in Orland Park. Also, it was also the same month, or I believe the same month or the month before, the sighting that was in Empire, Ohio, the truck driver that took that triangular, the picture of the object coming out of a large triangle. Do you recall that one by any chance?
No, I'm afraid not.
Very nice UFO picture. In fact, if you go online, look at Empire, Ohio. Empire, Ohio UFO. Linda Moulton Howe was working on that case.
Okay.
I'm sure she had it on her site.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that object that was coming out and did some enhancing on that photo.
Mm-hmm.
Also cross-referenced it to the photographs that I had from the Oak Lawn sighting of that year. And also asked the gentleman who had that sighting in Oak Lawn if there was any unusual characteristics or sounds.
Mm-hmm.
He told me of a very unique sound and that this object was giving, and I don't really want to explain what it is because I hopefully want to get more witnesses coming forward explaining this.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman who was in Wisconsin explained, and I asked him if there any sound was being made, he used the very same unusual words in describing the sound that object made.
Mm. So this is this case is still under investigation.
Yes, it seems like there is a correlation between smaller objects coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
These unusual objects have a specific pattern, very unusual, unusual shape.
Mm-hmm.
There is not an aerodynamic shape. I could say that they seem to go into various stages where it is in a state of flux. I'm sure it's a state of flux, is what it looks like, I'm relatively sure.
Yeah.
So the exterior is glowing, illuminating,
okay.
And there's various colors still, so it's going through a spectral range of frequency.
Right. I'm going to have to take a very short break here to remind our listeners that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves, and I'm David Twitchell, you're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with the State Director for the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, State Director of Illinois, and we're talking about the Tinley Park incident, and now I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, that is fascinating, I think we could go on and on the whole hour with the Tinley Park incident, but I did want to get to the O'Hare 2006 incident. I'm sure our listeners have heard about this, but refresh our memories, if you would.
It was November the 7th, approximately 4:20 in the afternoon, which would have been, I believe, just before twilight. We still had light, we had an overcast, a solid overcast that day at approximately 1,500 feet to 1,900 feet. And that cloud base, I believe, was somewhere around 3,000 to 6,000 feet thick. And over gate C-17, concourse C, which would be United Airlines, UAL, there was an object that was hovering below the cloud ceiling at approximately 1,400 feet below. The object sat there for a good 20 minutes. It was initially observed and reported by a UAL employee working at the ramp on a outgoing plane.
Right.
I forgot where it was going to. Columbus, Ohio.
Maintenance man is who reported it?
Yes, a ramp rat, as I believe is what they refer to them.
Okay.
And he called his supervisor. Manager came down, looked up, sure enough was there. By that time, the pilot, co-pilot, inside the cockpit were also observing the object. At that point, they called the tower, and multiple individuals were hearing, many individuals hearing, this cat chatter, you know, crosstalk about this UFO above Gate C-17. Another gentleman who was taxiing in a 777, a UAL, seen the object from his cockpit along with everybody in there. I would say without a doubt this was a mass sighting because my key witness, was coming in on Mannheim Road, seeing the object clear as could be below the cloud cover, and she was coming in with a friend of hers to pick up another friend, and the person in the car with her was a retired doctor from Belgium, and they were picking up their friend, who was an international pilot, at the international in-course, the concourse. The thing that was very interesting to her is it seemed to blend in with the cloud cover in the sky, but yet it was very visible, even on first glance. So it was, so it seemed like it was either mimicking or had a material that was making itself pretty well camouflaged.
They seem to act like chameleons, don't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would say without a doubt.
But what was the shape of this particular object?
Think of the traditional or the the dish-shaped craft that we've been brought up, you know, depicting in drawings and sightings, but much plumper, more like a football, but uniform at both ends, and probably not as pronounced in the center. The object was what appeared to be spinning in a counterclockwise rotation, but then that may be an optical illusion depending on an energy field. So that's a possibility, too. She was very interesting in her observation because she was trying to discern what type of material was this object comprised of. And one of the things she even took into consideration was some sort of ceramic composite. And I really enjoyed her interpretations. And here I found out she was a military brat. Her father was a retired captain of a helicopter air wing for the Navy. And she was a ex-reporter and a television reporter, anchor person.
So she pretty much knew what should be in our airspace and what shouldn't be?
Yes. In fact, that's what she says. She says, I know pretty much anything that was stealth. I had the chance to look at this stuff close up. I would see it on a regular basis. I know, and she was describing all of the aspects in military terms. Her observations were stellar.
Now, at first, United Airlines denied having seen any object at all.
Correct. In fact, they denied any reports or safety concerns. And this is what these people came forward, not to report, you know, an invasion from outer space or anything absurd. They were just saying, there is an object, clearly an object, unidentified in Class B restricted airspace. This is a security issue.
Yeah.
And in the world of 9/11, of course, this is what they're supposed to do, correct?
The first thing I would think of is they called Air Force, and Air Force was right there to defend us. Am I right?
Yes, that's what I would think or want.
But did it happen?
No.
And why
so
not?
So you could see that they had a protocol already
right.
in how to handle such things. And,
right.
and of course, there's an historical perspective to the whole O'Hare case, because this wouldn't be the first time or last time we've had sightings up there.
Now, if that had been a small plane, a helicopter that did not belong there, how long do you think it would take before it would have been picked out of the sky?
Oh, they would have had them brought down relatively quick. There would be military planes. Somebody, you know, would have been up there in, you know, I would say the most 10 minutes, halfway through there. This bout, somebody would have been there forcing them down, or at least out of the area.
Do you remember the old TV show, now I'm dating myself, Hogan's Heroes?
Oh, sure.
Where the Sergeant Schultz says, "I see nothing, I know nothing."
I think that's the standard order when it comes yeah. to this phenomenon.
We see nothing.
And did you know that day Hami Masson was coming in? He was there at 6 o'clock.
Mm.
He was there at 6, and he says, "Sam, do you think that they knew I was coming in?"
He was, oh, no. Hami Masson was coming into Chicago?
Yeah, he was. He came in that day at 6, and this was at 4:20. So at 4:20 to 4:40, there was still some activity as far as people running around and
yeah.
telling people they didn't see anything, probably till well after 5.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. He knew nothing about it.
No, really?
No. No.
They're kind of introducing him. Here is Hami Masson.
Wasn't that funny?
But anyway, okay. Now, yeah, I've heard the actual tower and maintenance people, whoever it was, from the tower anyway, the transmission.
Yes.
And it wasn't, I was going to play it on air here, but it wasn't really radio quality. But the thing is, they, you know, first they said, "Oh, come on, wait, who are you kidding?" You know, "Really, is it really a UFO?" And then the tower used the term UFO.
Yep.
We are diverted. They diverted some traffic because of the quote unquote UFO.
Yes, and they were giving orders to keep their eyes open, to be aware that this was spotted, and to, you know, pay attention, see if it's in the air, and to avoid it.
Hmm.
The other thing was, you know, people were saying, "Well, if it was up there, the tower would have seen it." Actually, no. Because of the eave on the tower, it wouldn't have seen it.
Okay.
Yet, you know, the radar data doesn't really show anything very pronounced in that area, though there is something showing. Now, some people would say, "Well, there. Obviously, there's nothing there." Radar picks up motion. If it's not moving, it's not being picked up.
Right. Right.
That was the other interesting thing, motion. And this is where it really gets unusual. My witness says, as she was watching groups of people independently picking this out in the sky, in other words, no one was coaxing them, but they were seeing it, and groups were, congregating throughout the concourse there,
yeah.
Taking pictures. So there are pictures out there. Yes, there is footage. And in an instance, the object shot through the clouds, went nearly straight up, and shot through the clouds, and leaving a gaping hole. In other words, displaced all that humidity from there up to the blue sky above. Now, that takes quite a bit of energy to do that.
Well, isn't there supposed to be a weather phenomenon where there are holes in the clouds?
Yeah. In fact, all that would be is just purely where the humidity in that area just gets super cooled. It turns to ice and just falls straight down, or snow.
Hmm.
And that does happen. But in this case, the object was below it, was no hole, and it just shot straight through it. Now,
and the weather conditions weren't conducive to that.
Absolutely. In fact, it wasn't even conducive for the lenticular cloud that they said was responsible for this object or observation.
Yeah.
a lenticular cloud would be seen on the leeward side of a mountain or in an area with a tremendous amount of wind. And in the Midwest here, rarely, but in some instances, I have seen them, very rarely. You have to have some serious weather. The wind that day, I think we had a maximum breeze of 5 miles an hour.
Wow. Huh.
So the closest weather or closest area with a weather condition that could be conducive to creating lenticular cloud minus the leeward side of a mountain would have been Wichita, Kansas that day.
So what they're saying is a lenticular cloud that requires wind, where there was only 5 miles an hour, formed and then shot up through a cloud bank.
A phenomena that defies itself this in so many areas that it would be rarer than a UFO.
Yeah,
I mean so.
I've said it before, some of the explanations they give, it's really more believable to think that we're being visited by a superior civilization.
Yes, yeah. And the thing is, if it's, I have an interest in all phenomena, so if it's a weather phenomena, I would have really enjoyed looking into that too, it wouldn't matter, but this wasn't the case, it was apparently something, you know, that was truly unusual and fits the definition of an unidentified aerial phenomena / object, be it UFO, UAP.
So what was the final explanation? Was that it, a weather phenomenon, their final explanation?
They were saying it was weather phenomena, yes.
And then they just dropped it.
Yes, and kept it at that. And then NARCAP, who took the lead on the investigation, and I worked with them, they kept it as an unknown.
Right.
It could be one of a few things. You know, if it was a unmanned aerial vehicle, something like that, some new advanced technology, or, of course, unidentified aerial phenomena.
Mm-hmm. New advanced technology on whose part?
Yeah, exactly.
Our part?
Yes, that possibility or...
Well, send them to the Middle East, for goodness sake.
Exactly.
Say. You know? Because I think they're out of the stage of craft.
Who knows?
Craft. I need to take one more break to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with the State Director of Illinois, Mr. Sam Marento. We've been discussing the Chicago O'Hare incident of 2006. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, it was November 7th, 2006.
But in 2008, now, here's one I haven't heard of, the North Lake car incident. Is that the one where the invisible UFO hit the car?
Well, we don't know what hit the car. We know just, or something hit it. We just know there was a cause effect by something. And Peter Davenport asked Julian I to look into this. You know, Julie's an investigator too.
Okay.
So we went out there.
So you don't know what it was, huh?
We have no idea exactly what it was, but that it was some energy or some cause effect did take place. This car, the whole driver's side of all the metal was as if you were to take a beer can and suck the air out of it, collapsing it.
Was the paint damaged?
The paint had a gloss, a luster. Dullness. In fact, the chip was sent to a lab where it was examined, and there were some truly unusual aspects to it where they wanted further evaluation. The car, as far as the whole side of the car, was supposed to be given to us after the skin of the the door was removed.
Mm-hmm.
The front and quarter the front quarter panel and rear quarter panel were supposed to be given to us. And what had happened was when we went to retrieve it, the gentleman who was the manager said he will be right back with the pieces, the evidence for us. Came up front and said, "You wouldn't believe it." And I says, "Don't tell me it's missing." He goes, "Somebody came in here claiming to be you and took the evidence."
And it never resurfaced?
Never. The sad part was the piece of the other piece of evidence from the university at the lab there was also taken in a strange identity mix-up where somebody came in, stated to be the next person in line to examine it, was given the chip, main chip, and waltzed off with it. Luckily, we did have more, and they were very much alarmed over this. So all right. It was a strange incident that obviously resulted from something more than a deer hitting it.
So the woman was driving at the time?
She was driving at approximately 45 miles an hour on Lake Cook Road, and it's a dark area, no cars in front of her, no cars in back that she was able to see. She was driving in the left-hand lane. All of a sudden, she felt being moved over, bumped over, and there was a noise. She was moved over almost entirely over to the other lane, pulled over at the next intersection, got out of the car where she's seen the entire side of the car just, you know, destroyed, and her mirror hanging. This is very unusual. Her mirror was hanging from two wires because it was a remote control mirror,
right.
This being the safety mirror, driver's side mirror. The mirror was hit from behind, flipped over, hit the A pillar, which of course would be the left side holding the windshield, which would also be part of the roll cage. This would be the most, the sturdiest part of the automobile because this is your roll cage.
Mm-hmm.
It left an indentation that was approximately a quarter inch plus and 8 inches long in that A pillar solid metal. And mind you now, that was caused by plastic hitting it. And obviously the plastic versus the metal, the one being far more superior and harder, the only way to compensate for that would be increase the mass. And the only way to increase the mass would be velocity. You know, it's a simple laws of physics.
Right.
Well, the object had to be moving at quite some speed because she was going at 45 miles an hour. So that can actually be calculated out as far as to figure out the amount of speed that hit, and that's something that when I have, you know, an extra month of my life to dedicate to it, I could get those figures together.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very good case.
So
again, it's open.
So either something, an object came directly at her or...
From behind.
From behind, so... But she never saw anything. Nobody ever stopped and said, "I'm sorry, I hit you," or "You hit me," or
nothing. She's seen no lights. She's seen nobody. The other thing is, it could have been as little as an angle of 30 degrees. So I shouldn't say it, behind her. It came from at an angle towards the side of the car. And from what I could figure out, I think my calculation was 30 degrees or greater.
And if it came from behind, okay, if she's in the left lane on the right hand side, typically other vehicles would be coming toward her, not from behind her.
Oh, sure.
And if somebody passed her, well, we would have seen her. Well, that's a mystery, isn't it, then? Back to these paint chips, was there any heat? Did it show that any heat was involved?
What was involved was the manner in which certain molecules were separated in the paint. That could have only been done with some very unusual energy, put it that way.
Pressure.
I think it would be a spinning, possibly energy field, plasma, something.
Hmm.
So it could have been a pulse of energy, something unusual to separate the molecules that would have been bound and uniformly done.
So it could have been a natural phenomenon of some kind, plasma.
Well,
ball,
what I was
ball lightning
about and interested with, you know, plasma, of course, and the other thing is some sort of piezoelectric discharge.
Mm-hmm.
So I was checking.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are... The following program has been pre-recorded.
It's a very good case. I'm very...
They're just outside.
Damage to anything else inside. There was nothing.
Hmm.
The other thing was that mirror that I mentioned that wasn't cracked. The only thing that was damaged in the mirror was the back of the mirror. And then, of course, the A-pillar, which is metal, the strongest part of the body.
But the glass wasn't cracked.
Nope. In fact, no other metal was damaged. The only thing that was damaged was anything with iron. Just iron.
Any accounting for that?
Well, whatever it was, it had to go and affect the most dense items and those with iron. That's it.
Still doesn't make sense. I was just short of a metallurgist. I was a tool and die maker, and that doesn't make sense.
Nope, it doesn't. So it's very interesting and may have something to do with Hutchinson's effect and something along the line of strange anomalies that come out of those type of observations.
Yeah. You know, Bud Hopkins' Sight Unseen, his book, Sight Unseen, demonstrates that, you know, there could be UFOs out there, could be craft, and we just can't see them. They're just outside of our visual range, you know?
No doubt.
In ultraviolet, in infrared, a lot of them show up in infrared photography.
I think you hit it on the head. Yeah. Most of this phenomena exhibits itself in a different range.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we have these sightings,
mm-hmm,
in periods of time, like, for instance, 2004, the year of the weird, I think there may be either a thinning of the veil, of either a dimensional veil, or the area where they're being seen may be more conducive, mm-hmm, to exhibit the phenomena itself.
Yeah.
Say areas of high quartz concentration, seismic activity, et cetera, et cetera. Who knows?
So you're saying that this could also be other dimensional phenomena?
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, 2004, I was brought into accepting that as being plausible, or at least a strong possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something I didn't need. That rabbit hole I didn't need to go down. I was in far enough.
Don't tell me the truth. I don't want to know.
Exactly.
I've heard that before, too. But, you know, it just gets, you know, for every question that's answered, 10 more are posed.
Yes.
You know?
I think the bottom line is I'm through at answers. I'm just very happy to get the next set of questions.
Yeah.
And that's where science is best
Right.
You know, exhibited, and what you do in science is pursue questions.
Yeah.
How did that happen? And question it again. And okay, if this did that, then can this happen?
Yeah,
that's where we get going. And,
I'm all for science. I mean, science is great. It's given us answers to many, many, many things. And, you know, I was just going to say, 150 years ago, if you couldn't hear it or see it, it didn't exist. But now our listeners are listening to this radio show on something they had no concept of back then. And once the radio, the TV is turned off, it doesn't go away. It's right there in the room with them.
Yeah.
Always was. But we just didn't know. We didn't have anything to measure it with. Now we do. So, don't get me going on that now. But at any rate, We've got a MUFON symposium coming up soon.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, it looks as though we're going to have some very good speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope to get my butt out there this year. Are you going to be going out at all?
I hope to. I may not be able to. We're going through a personal thing now with my wife's mother and yada yada, but hopefully I can.
I haven't been able to make too many myself.
Yeah.
And, to me, it's important to do it this year.
Hmm.
I would like to see more people attend these symposiums. The other thing is I'd like to see people participate regardless of the politics that goes on, realizing that, you know, a organization is comprised of individuals. None of us are perfect, but the objective and the purpose has to be what we pursue, and that's the passion.
Right.
That should keep us together.
Right. No, you know, you may disagree with what this guy says or that gal says, but take from it what you will, you know, put in your own, interject your own thoughts and come away with something. I find I always come, be it MUFON Symposium or UFO Congress, I come away with something.
Absolutely.
And it's usually more questions, you know.
And that's it, really. That's the pursuit of intellect is questions, not answers.
Yeah. I've been delving with this into this thing virtually all my life now, and I come away from these symposiums and these UFO Congress things, and I say, I didn't know that. You know?
Oh, yeah.
We're never going to know it all.
No.
And the guy who says, I'm going to tell you everything, that you know, I'm going to tell you the aliens' agenda and this, that, and the other, run.
Yeah.
Because nobody knows that.
I don't even know if they know what it's all about.
Well, they like to tell you. But
I mean, the beings themselves.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I always hear this this whole dichotomy, and this is where we have to escape from the dichotomy, where they're saying, oh, are they good, they bad? No, it's not about good, bad.
No.
It just is. You know, an agenda is a matter of your place in the agenda and how you feel it's going to affect you. Are you going to like it or not like it? So I think it's more clinical than anything else, and that is really not a matter of morals or whatever.
No. No, it's not. It's not. I think that their agenda really is here to find out about us, because they don't have the answers.
Yes, I think curiosity really is one of the main reasons. The other, I personally feel, is some sort of interdependence on each other.
No, yeah.
So, who knows?
The question is, why do they abduct us? Why do they examine us?
Yes.
Because, you know, what would we do if we're out there?
Yes.
And we find another species. You know, take a sample. Look it over. Check it out.
Like the poor lightning bugs that we tortured sitting in
certainly
jars as children.
Certainly.
My gosh, the girl down the street, I think she had thousands of them being sent off to for experiments. And I'd plan at night how to break into the house to let them out and let them be free. Never did it, of course.
No.
That would be a no-no. But, to free the poor lightning bugs.
Really?
But
any lectures for you in the future, or anything for you in the future?
Yeah, a few. We have I'll be doing some speaking in around the area at various libraries.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the 19th of June I'll be speaking at the Romeoville Library.
Mm-hmm.
I will be speaking at our little mini symposium conference, get-together, whatever you want to call it, at Starve Rock Lodge in Utica, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel is mutually inconvenient for people, you know, for a beautiful place that all of us could say, gee, that took a long time to get here, but it was worth it.
Yeah, it was worth it.
And we have that on the 21st of this month.
Yeah.
Thank you, and you could post my email address, too.
Post your email, I certainly will.
It's MUFONSAM@comcast.net.
Mr. Sam Maranto, I really appreciate you joining us this evening, and I hope we can do this again sometime.
Oh, certainly, David, anytime. I'd be
something
a privilege to be back on.
be good. Anything as big as Tenley Park or the O'Hare incident happens, give me a call. You know how to contact me, and we'll go back on and tell the world. What do you think?
Thank you very much, and you know you can count on me.
Very good. Thanks. Bye-bye. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on the forum button on the homepage. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. Please stay tuned to whfr.fm, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
WHFR, Dearborn. Arthur C. Clarke once observed, "Two possibilities exist. Either we are alone in the universe, or we are not. Both are equally terrifying." Join your host, David Twitchell, the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m., when he and special guests examine the scientific evidence on We Are Not Alone. Right here on WHFR.FM 89.3. That's the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. We are not alone.
This is an official station of the MAEB.
MAEB.
The Michigan Association of Educational Broadcasters was formed in 1977 to support your local high school and college radio stations. These stations serve the community and create alternative programming. But most importantly, they discover and train the next generation of broadcasters. For more information on the MAEB and its affiliates, visit www.maeb.org.
The performing arts are an important facet of life. There is no substitute for the relationship between audience and performer. Your contributions to the Henry Ford Community College Theater Program enable students and faculty to continue promoting HFCC's artistic standards. By becoming a member of the Friends of HFCC Theater, you are allowing the theater program to prosper through establishing a scholarship fund, improving costume and scene shop facilities, and enabling the continuation of musical theater productions. For more information on becoming a friend of HFCC Theater, call 313-845.